Welcome to Crossroads. A Chinese video game has jumped to the top of the sales charts. Now, this game, Black Myth Wukong, sold close to 10 million copies within just a few days of its release. And while the game has caused some controversies over, like, woke politics, much of the criticism is focused on the least of the problems. Now, first on the game and how the Chinese Communist Party is now viewing it. This is South China Morning Post. They say, the popularity of Black Myth Wukong has Chinese investors and video game developers looking at ways to replicate its success. But industry insiders say that might be a decade away. They say the blockbuster game developed by Tencent Holdings, one big Chinese company, of course, it's a Tencent Holdings-backed startup Game Science, became an overnight sensation in China after its release on Tuesday and has been well received in global markets. It says the uncertainty of China's video game regulations, which 3 years ago wiped U.S. $100 billion of value from related stocks, has made investors and game developers alike hesitant to invest the time and money needed for big projects like Black Myth. Now, the success of the game is kind of spurring the CCP to look into video games as kind of a new market of influence. And they've mostly focused until recently on mobile games and cash grab kind of gotcha games. It's games with like casino type systems in them. But this new success, again, of Black Myth Wukong, is having them look to expand their influence over the high-end gaming market. There are a few problems with this. One of the big ones, of course, being that it takes like 5 to 10 years to develop a lot of AAA games, meaning it takes a very long time, and if the CCP just changes its regulations on one day, it wipes out all that work. The CCP has kind of a love-hate relationship with video games. Inside China, it restricts playtime for kids. It makes it so that, of course, you can't include a lot of content. They deeply control it. And, of course, they also see the outside value in it, where, again, some of the Chinese video games include some of the biggest ones currently on the market. For the Chinese Communist Party, a lot of that has now changed, though, because despite, again, the CCP's kind of cracking down on the whole gaming industry inside China, the big thing that took place was all the major video game companies signed a joint letter where they essentially stated publicly that they were going to start serving the interests of the Chinese Communist Party. And so there's no real barrier between the gaming industry and CCP propaganda now because of that pledge that they all made. And again, that's part of the CCP's agreement with the gaming companies if they can operate without getting, basically destroyed by the regime. Now, when it comes to this game, Black Myth Wukong, it's got some bad press. Again, a lot of the kind of woke journalist organizations and so on within the gaming industry, they were criticizing it of having like sexist developers and things. And most of the surface controversy has been on that. There's allegations that they even misrepresented some of the statements of the game developers in order to frame those narratives. Essentially, what happened was the game developers in China refused to go along with the institutions that try forcing game developers to include woke content. But the real problem with the Chinese video games has nothing to do with that, at least in my opinion. The real problem is when it comes to propaganda, but most importantly, the future of anti-cheat software. Now, to be clear, just on the background of this, Black Myth does not include China-run anti-cheat systems. It uses Denuvo, which is an anti-cheat system, and also a digital rights management system that's based in Austria. But the same cannot be said about many other games under the Chinese umbrella. In particular, one of the main programs like this, right, this anti-cheat system, is Anti-Cheat Expert, or ACE, which is from China's Tencent. Now, the issue with anti-cheat software, essentially what this does, you install a program on your computer that monitors for you trying to alter the game or trying to, change the code or downloading certain programs that will allow you to do things in the game that they let you essentially rig it. The issue, though, is not so much with the surface companies. It's not really Tencent, it's not these game developers, but instead because of the Chinese Communist Party's data laws. If you're a company in China and you're collecting data, including from this anti-cheat system, it means that Chinese authorities, legally in China, they have to be granted access to all of that data. And when it comes to anti-cheat software, it's important to emphasize how much access they have. a lot of anti-cheat software is given kernel-level access to your computer. That's a level of access to your computer that you as a user don't even have. That means that every single thing that takes place on your computer is monitored by the anti-cheat software. And the problem with anti-cheat software is some of it you can't really uninstall. And it's not even just active when you play the games. It's active essentially all the time. Which means, of course, that if you have a Chinese company running video games and so on, people download the games, maybe a military officer, maybe a politician, maybe a spy or someone working with CIA or FBI, if they install these video games, and it automatically installs oftentimes an anti-cheat system, it means that they have granted access to a China-run program that is given almost total access to your computer. That is the biggest issue. Now, Chinese companies have already run into some of the most popular, games on the market. Already some of the biggest games, the biggest online games, are run by Chinese companies. And the fact that some of them have opened up tens of millions of computers to essentially having this level of access, this represents one of the biggest possible breaches of information now taking place. When Congress went after TikTok, notably, saying that it raises issues of possible data spying. The video game industry, you're looking at just millions upon millions upon millions of people who've downloaded these, and millions upon millions upon millions of computers that are given basically almost total access to the Chinese regime. Now, the significance with Black Myth Wukong, though, is more the attention it's getting from the Chinese Communist Party. The CCP, because of its success, is now going to focus more heavily on the gaming market. And this, of course, opens them up to backdoor access of a shocking amount of systems abroad, unless something is done to maybe restrict Chinese, anti-cheat systems going forward. Now, in other news, after the Chinese Communist Party faced criticism for doping scandals in the recent Olympics, the CCP is now looking to make itself the global authority on fighting against the doping of athletes. This is South China Morning Post. They say a state think tank has outlined the president's vision, right, Xi Jinping, for sport in China, saying it is driving a push for fair competition and a more, quote, just and reasonable global sports order with a greater voice for developing nations, like China. In its report on Xi Jinping's thought on sports, the Xinhua Institute, under the official news agency Xinhua, one of the major mouthpieces of the Chinese Communist Party, also highlighted the CCP leader's call for zero tolerance of doping. Zero tolerance, apparently, unless they're Chinese. Now, it says the report released on Tuesday marks the first time Xi Jinping's ideology on sports has been laid out, adding to his political doctrine on culture, unveiled in October, and on the economy, diplomacy, military environment, and legal affairs. And they say, quote, the sporting values of fair play, compliance with the rules, and respect for opponents can also be used to guide the construction of human, political, economic, and social life. And they say this is particularly meaningful in the field of great power competition, the report says. Great power competition is a fancy way of saying competition with the United States, typically referred to that as competition with the U.S., China, and sometimes Russia. Now, this new program the CCP has trying to make itself an authority on doping, it's of course related to the doping scandal, the swim team, the Chinese swim team at the Paris Olympics. And now, because of this, there are U.S. investigations underway into the scandal. It appears that the Chinese Communist Party is trying to get ahead of that whole scandal, essentially, and establish itself as an authority on the very problem that it seems to be involved with. There were notably reports coming out, including from a whistleblower, saying the Chinese Communist Party actually requires many of its athletes to take performance-enhancing drugs. And if you refuse to take these drugs, you can be punished by the CCP. But now the CCP is trying to make itself the authority on fighting against this. This is basically the CCP trying to establish a narrative, right? If they get accused of doping with their athletes and using performance-enhancing drugs, they can claim that China has a zero-tolerance rule on this. And they can also move to establish themselves as an authority to hold others to account. That, in other words, they can actually say, hey, U.S. has a problem. China's fighting against the doping scandal. And they can blame their political enemies while covering up their own abuses. Now, this is a typical mafia tactic. The CCP, as many have pointed out, basically works like a mafia. Let's say, for example, you're involved in a crime, and so you pretend to offer the solution of fighting the very crime that you're actually the one committing. I've personally encountered the CCP doing this with some of its front operations, by the way, where, for example, the Chinese Communist Party through the United Front will influence a Chinese Tong. Beneath the Tong is one of the triad organizations, Chinese organized crime. And the Tong that runs that organization, the criminal organization, will also be working with the police to fight the very crimes that they're responsible for. In fact, a lot of Tongs are even part of like police advisory boards and so on, while at the same time beneath them is the Chinese mafia. This is a common thing you find with a lot of organized criminal groups. They'll have surface operations, trying to have a role within the society, providing medical services or police benevolence, you know, type operations, while they're the ones committing the very crimes that they claim to be representing as an act of trying to stop. Now, as this happens as well, a new maritime security force is starting up in the Asia Pacific, and it's pushing back against the Chinese Communist Party's claims in that whole region. I'll be talking about this after we come back from a quick break.
Experts agree. One of the best ways to protect against financial uncertainty is to diversify your portfolio. Learn how physical gold and silver can secure your retirement funds from today's economic challenges with a gold IRA from American Hartford Gold. You can safeguard your wealth with no penalties or taxes when you transfer your current qualifying retirement accounts. Call now and our precious metals specialists will send you a free information kit, no cost or obligation. American Hartford Gold, a trusted industry leader with an A-plus from the Better Business Bureau, has a 5-star rating from thousands of happy clients. Whether you are getting physical precious metals in a gold IRA or delivered to your doorstep, we offer only the highest quality gold and silver. For your peace of mind, we also offer a no-fee buyback commitment, a low-price guarantee, along with free shipping and free insurance. So, don't wait. Call the number on your screen today and secure your financial future.
Welcome back. A new security force is starting up in the Asia Pacific, and this is pushing back against the Chinese Communist Party's claims to that whole region. Interestingly, Australia is playing a leading role in this new security operation, and it's called the Pacific Policing Initiative. Australia is going to spend approximately $271 million over 5 years in this agreement, and it aims to increase domestic security in the Pacific region by creating regional police training centers and as a police support group, which is a, quote, trained pool of officers from multiple Pacific countries ready to deploy in response to requests for assistance to major events or to provide support in times of crisis, according again to the Australian government. Now, here's the Australian Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, announcing the plan. Watch.
Our Pacific neighbours stand with each other and we help each other in times of need. And it is good that this morning we endorsed the Pacific Policing Initiative. It was a major objective that we had from this Pacific Island Forum meeting. This demonstrates how Pacific leaders are working together to shape the future that we want to see. The first task of any national leader is to look after the security and safety of our residents. And that is what this is about. Making sure that by working together, the security of the entire region will be much stronger and will be looked after by ourselves.
Now, an interesting point to note in this announcement is a statement where they say, making sure that by working together, the security of the entire region will be much stronger and will be looked after by ourselves. And this is kind of seems like a nod to the CCP, which is trying to deepen its security presence and also links in the highly contested Pacific region. The Chinese Communist Party is trying to gain influence over a lot of the island nations in the Pacific area. And of course, as it builds relations with them, it can also establish its own types of bases of operations, which of course, as the US and Australia and Japan are working together to form their own, this is the CCP pushing deeper into the Pacific as a way to challenge that. Now, remember back in 2022 when the Solomon Islands signed a secret security pact with China despite concerns from Australia, New Zealand, and the U.S.? Well, they followed that up with another agreement with China in 2023 on police cooperation. The Guardian said that China and Solomon Islands have signed a deal on police cooperation as part of an upgrade of their relations to a comprehensive strategic partnership 4 years after the Pacific country switched ties from Taiwan to Beijing. And importantly as well, there are some countries in that region that still recognize Taiwan as kind of the main China. Now, notes that the Police Cooperation Pact was among 9 deals signed as the Prime Minister of the Solomon Islands met with the CCP Premier Li Qiang in Beijing, underlining the Solomon's foreign policy shift. Now, it also notes that China, the CCP, will continue to provide assistance to the Solomon Islands to enhance its law enforcement capacity, according to a joint statement released by the CCP's official Xinhua news agency. Now, back in February this year, Reuters reported that Chinese police were working in the remote island nation of Kiribati. Now, here's more on this from Reuters. They say Chinese police are working in the remote atoll nation of Kiribati, a Pacific Ocean neighbor of Hawaii, with uniformed officers involved in community policing and a crime database program, according to officials. And it's that Kiribati has not publicly announced the policing deal with China, which comes as Beijing renews a push to expand security ties in the Pacific Islands in an intensifying rivalry with the United States. Now, it says that Kiribati, a nation of 115,000 residents, is considered strategic despite being small, as it is relatively close to Hawaii and controls one of the biggest exclusive economic zones in the world, covering more than 1.35 million square miles of the Pacific. It hosts a Japanese satellite tracking station also. And it notes that Kiribati's acting police commissioner told Reuters the Chinese police on the island work with local police, but there was no Chinese police station in Kiribati. They said, quote, "The Chinese police delegation teamwork with the Kiribati Police Service to assist on community policing programs in martial arts, tai chi, kung fu, and IT department assisting our crime database program," he said in an email. Now, notes as well that China's embassy in Kiribati did not respond to a Reuters request for comment on the role of its police, and in a January social media post, the embassy named the leader of the Chinese police station in Kiribati. It notes as well that Kiribati's acting police commissioner, who attended a December meeting between China's public security minister, Wang Xiaohong, and several Pacific Island police officials in Beijing, said Kiribati had requested China's policing assistance in 2022. And it notes as well that up to a dozen uniformed Chinese police arrived last year on a 6-month rotation. Now, what the Chinese Communist Party has been trying to do in the Pacific region, whether it's, of course, in the South China Sea, the East China Sea, or just abroad, is it's trying to break out of the what we call the second island chain. The CCP is trying to control the waters in these regions, because what they can do once they control them is move forward in what's referred to in the defense community as the A2AD strategy, that is anti-access area defense. And the concern of the United States and Japan and the Philippines and Vietnam and many others is that the CCP, once it establishes control, can do things, for example, like establish missile defenses on maybe artificial islands, or maybe establish military bases in cooperation with some of these countries. After they establish these bases, they can establish this anti-access strategy, where they put up missile defenses, where they put up, for example, maybe even mining of the ocean, which is something that's actually been presented as a possible plan, which will make it so that they can keep out the United States from that whole region, and the CCP can then try to dominate it. This is one of the big concerns. At the same time, many other countries aside from the United States are now seeing the CCP as a more direct threat. This is why you have Japan playing a very active role, even outside of, you know, what the U.S. is doing. This is why you have Australia now taking a more direct role as well, notably with the island nations around Australia. And what the CCP is doing with these police operations is trying to use this as a way to gain influence within these countries. If the CCP provides the policing service, or maybe gives them the infrastructure to monitor data and otherwise, the CCP can then move to establish a stronger base in these countries. Australia is pushing back against that with this strategy by having it so that they train up these countries and establish a cooperative police program between these countries, strengthening them and making it so that it's not necessary for them to allow the CCP to have access to do this on their end. Notably, the CCP does this even in Europe. In fact, they even had Chinese police patrolling in Italy for a while. Now, it's in light of these moves by the Chinese Communist Party in the Pacific region that countries like Australia are looking to push back and also shore up their own security in the whole region. And this is in addition to other things happening. The United States right now is offering to begin giving military escorts to Philippine ships. Now, in other news, the United States has begun deploying Reaper drones to contested airspace near China. Now, Newsweek said this. They said the United States Marine Corps has deployed an unknown number of spying drones to a strategic Japanese island close to China in contested airspace, according to reports on Monday. It says the Marine Corps has sent MQ-9A Reaper drones to Kadena Air Base on the Japanese island of Okinawa to support the training. And they say this will increase proficiency in support of the defense of Japan, according to the spokesperson of the Marines, telling this to U.S. newspaper Star and Stripes. Now, the Reaper is an unmanned expeditionary medium-altitude high-endurance aircraft that is assigned to extend range of the Maritime Air Ground Task Force. And as further in, the drone supports the Marines' littoral operations in contested environments with a long-range intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance capability. The service has concluded that it must expand and increase unmanned aviation capabilities to survive and thrive inside contested spaces. Now, what this really does, this will give the United States early warnings on Chinese Communist Party operations in that area. And this is happening, notably, just after the CCP flew warplanes into Japanese airspace for the first time, and notably caused the Japanese to become very alarmed by that. Now, for the United States, it appears that its military footprint in this whole region is set to keep growing. This is likely not the end. This is likely the beginning we're seeing right now. Now, this is from a new report from the Congressional Research Service through the U.S. Naval Institute. They said potential specific U.S. goals for the U.S.-China strategic competition in the South China Sea, SCS, and East China Sea, ECS, include but are not necessarily limited to the following: dissuading China from carrying out additional base construction activities in the South China Sea, moving additional military personnel, equipment, and supplies to bases at sites that it occupies in the South China Sea, initiating island building or base construction activities at the Scarborough Shoal in the South China Sea, declaring straight baselines around land features it claims in the South China Sea, or declaring an air defense identification zone, an ADIZ, over the South China Sea, and encouraging China to reduce or end operations by its maritime forces at the Senkaku Islands in the East China Sea, halt actions extended to put pressure against Philippine-occupied sites in the Spratly Islands, provide greater access by Philippine fishermen to waters surrounding the Scarborough Shoal or in Spratly Islands, also to adopt U.S. Western definitions regarding freedom of the seas and accept and abide by the July 2016 Tribunal Award in the South China Sea arbitration state involving the Philippines and China. Notably, the CCP in that case was found to not have historical ownership over the South China Sea, as they claim. The Philippines actually pushed back against the CCP, and it was determined during a tribunal the Chinese Communist Party has no valid claim to that region. And the CCP just kind of threw its arms and said, well, we're going to claim it anyways, because under Chinese law, we claim it and you have to abide by Chinese law is what they're saying. Now, what this basically means is that the U.S. is projecting the CCP plans to continue extending its control of that whole region, South China Sea and East China Sea. And of course, that's causing problems and territorial disputes, notably with the Philippines and with Japan. And also, again, Taiwan and Vietnam heavily as well. And what the U.S. is trying to stop the CCP from doing is building artificial islands. They're taking small, you know, outcropping of little land masses, and they're bringing sand and just dredging it in and building new islands and then establishing military bases on these islands. Once they establish these military bases, they create a defensive ring around them. And by doing this in multiple locations throughout that whole region, the CCP is like building new land masses and then claiming ownership over them and then establishing military defenses around them and using this to claim ownership over that region. Now, by doing this, again, what the CCP is really carrying out is operations to extend its military reach past, again, the borders it has right now, where it's kind of kept inside a defensive region by Taiwan, South Korea, and Japan. And notably as well, it doesn't have access to deep water enough to run, for example, submarines and so on, without being detected as they leave Chinese waters. If they're able to really get access to this whole region, it means the CCP will be able to carry out, again, what they refer to as A2AD strategies, anti-access area denial. Now, in other news, it appears that the housing and labor crisis in China is actually starting to trigger one of the CCP's biggest fears, social instability. Chinese are now taking to the streets to protest in China in large numbers. Bloomberg said this. They said protests in China are on the rise as the effects of a slowing economy rattle citizens and Beijing refrains from taking bolder steps to shore up growth. Cases of dissent increased 18%, based on what's publicly shown at least, in the second quarter compared to the same period last year, and figures documented by the China Dissent Monitor at Freedom House, a U.S. advocacy group. It says the majority of events linked to economic issues, according to a report published Wednesday. Now, of those events, 44% related to labor and 21% involved aggrieved homeowners, the report noted. And it says that generally it defines dissent as acts of voicing grievances, asserting rights, or advancing interests in contention with the authorities or the powerful. And notes also the report offers a snapshot of sentiment across China, although it doesn't fully capture discontent within the world's number two economy because the CCP censors it, right? Now, they note as well that physical protests are suppressed and deterred by surveillance and internet controls strengthened under CCP leader Xi Jinping. And such unrest is unlikely to threaten the regime, it claims. Demonstrations are often small and isolated in nature, with protesters rarely directing their anger at the leader, Xi Jinping. Now, because of the CCP's censorship, again, we can't really get a clear picture of the actual scale of this. When people can't voice their discontent with the Chinese Communist Party on the internet, a few of them break through and still say it, that's a small percentage, like the tip of the iceberg you're seeing oftentimes, of the actual crisis. If people come out and protest and they're rapidly arrested and it actually makes headlines abroad, again, you're seeing the tip of an iceberg. The fact that protests are now making headlines abroad suggests the problem could be a lot worse than what we're seeing for the CCP. And notably as well, we're seeing some evidence of the falling quality of life in China through the consumption crisis. People are not buying like they used to. In fact, you know, notably, two Chinese companies that were projected to grow just exponentially just recently took a massive crash. Bloomberg said this. He said record-breaking stock sell-offs in two of China's biggest consumer companies erased more than $16 billion from the fortunes of the nation's richest people. It says that this underscores the deepening investor concerns over the health of Asia's biggest economy, China. It says China's wealthiest person, Nongfu Spring co-founder Zhang Shanshan, lost some $3 billion as the beverage giant sales fell by a record 10% Wednesday in Hong Kong, according to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index, leaving him with a total of $46.6 billion. Still a lot, right? But it notes that meanwhile, PDD Holdings Inc. founder Colin Huang's wealth tumbled by $14.1 billion on Monday as shares fell the most in company history after it warned revenue growth would inevitably dwindle. The retreat was Huang's biggest one-day loss ever, dropping him to fourth on Bloomberg's ranking after briefly holding the top spot early this month. And notes the slide continued on Tuesday when the Temu owner shares, Temu again being this massive Chinese e-commerce site, dropped a further 4.1%, knocking another $1.4 billion from Huang's riches. Now, just given the way that Temu operates, right? Temu and Shein, these are kind of the two biggest e-commerce sites coming up right now, and they're also facing a lot of controversy. It represents the state of the Chinese manufacturing market. These companies are like your finger on the pulse of the state of the manufacturing industry in China. Now, they were basically going for low-cost goods shipped directly from the manufacturers directly to consumers. But they've been running into a lot of legal challenges abroad and also pressure inside China over complaints from customers. Now, remember, the state of the economy in China, it impacts people's well-being. And what we're seeing right now is that people are not buying in China. People are not buying in China, and external laws in much of the rest of the world is restricting the CCP's selling in other markets. And this is causing kind of a feedback system. Now, people's abilities to buy homes and get by, that's of course tied into how much money they have. How much money they have is determined by how much they can sell, because again, the real estate industry took a big hit, the manufacturing market took a big hit, and these were two of the biggest industries people had jobs in. Now, as the situation gets worse, that also has a ripple effect on social stability. Because what happens is you can't afford to buy a home, you can't afford to buy food, you can't afford to get by, you can't afford the basic goods and basic luxuries you used to, because the markets are drying up. And when the markets dry up, the companies get hit, they have even less money. People start losing their jobs. People, because of that, then can afford even less. And as they can afford even less, they buy even less. And what's happening, again, is they need to sell off all of that because they keep producing, which is why they have a problem of overcapacity. They've continued producing at the same rate. They have too many goods. They can't sell them in China. They can't sell them outside of China. And this is now having a direct effect on the basic well-being of the individuals in China. And because their basic well-being is just dropping and dropping because of this, it's leading to problems of social instability. And if you read between the lines of what the CCP has been saying inside China, social stability, social stability, social stability. This is the biggest concern of the Chinese Communist Party right now. Well, everyone, that's all for today. Thank you for joining us. Let me know what you think in the comments. And also, please help us share this video. Help us get the word out. As always, please take care of yourselves, stay informed, and stay free. Thank you.